Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, written by Seymour Wright, is entitled Not Without Tears.
Ladies and gentlemen, forgive me if I seem a bit nervous, but I've never been on a radio program before, and it's
In trouble again, eh, Tavia?
Nachum Mendel, what are you doing here?
I thought you might be able to use a little help.
To tell the truth, I can. This program is supposed to be all about Sholem Aleichem, and somehow they put me in charge.
Well, what's so strange about that? After all, Sholem Aleichem was a very wonderful writer, and you're Tavia the dairyman, one of his greatest creations. He wrote a great many stories about you, so who can be better qualified to talk about him than you can?
Very well, I'll try. Ladies and gentlemen, today we bring you the story of the beloved humorist and writer Sholem Aleichem. His real name was Sholem Rabinowitz. He was born in Russia in 1850 and died in America in 1916. During his lifetime, he produced over 40 volumes of stories, novels, and plays. No, this isn't the way.
Now, what's the matter now?
He was born here, he lived there. That's not Sholem Aleichem. His life was more than a handful of facts.
What are you talking about?
Menachem Mendel, to be perfectly frank, meaning no disrespect, Sholem Aleichem's life wasn't a very dramatic or exciting one. To really know him, you have to know the people he wrote about. The people of the little towns like the one he himself grew up in. The fish peddlers, the tailors, the poultry women, the children, the Hebrew teachers and their students. Those are the important things. The things that matter.
All right. There's nothing wrong with that. If you want to talk about the people in Sholem Aleichem's books, go right ahead.
Well, how do I do it? What should I say? I'm a dairyman, not an orator. Besides, I haven't any of his books here.
That's no problem at all.
Oh, a whole shelf full of books. Where did they come from? How did they get here?
My dear Tevye, on radio, anything is possible.
Look, Tevye's Daughters, and the Adventures of Mortal, and Morning Star, and the Old Country, Inside Kozrilovka, the Great Fair. I don't know where to begin.
Well, why don't you begin with Kozrilovka? After all, who in the entire world did Sholem Aleichem love more than the poor Kozrilovkites? Huh? Here, you remember the story, Tevye? The town of the little people?
Oh, yes, of course.
The town of the little people into which I shall now take you, dear reader, is exactly in the middle of that blessed pale into which Jews have been packed as closely as herring in a barrel and told to increase and multiply. The name of the town is Kozrilovka. How did this name originate? I'll tell you. Among us Jews, poverty has many faces and many aspects. A poor man is an unlucky man. He is a pauper, a beggar, a starveling, a tramp, or a plain failure. A different tone is used in speaking of each one. But all these names express human wretchedness. However, there is still another name. Kozril, or Kozrilik. That name is spoken in a different tone altogether, almost a bragging tone. A Kozrilik is not just an ordinary pauper, a failure in life. On the contrary, he is a man who has not allowed poverty to degrade him. He laughs at it. He is poor, but cheerful. That's how they all are, these little people. Poor, but cheerful. It's hard to say what makes them so happy. Nothing. Just sheer joy of living. Living? If you ask them, how do you live, they will answer.
How do we live? Who knows? We live.
Whenever you meet them, they are scurrying like rabbits. This one here, that one there. And if you ask, well, what are you hurrying for? They reply.
What are we hurrying for? Well, if we hurry, we might run into something. Earn a few pennies. Provide for the Sabbath.
To provide for the Sabbath. That is their goal in life. All week they labor and sweat, wear themselves out, live without food or drink, just so there is something for the Sabbath. And when Holy Sabbath arrives, let Yehupitz perish, let Odessa be razed, let Paris itself sink into the earth. Kazrilevka live. But the real pride of Kazrilevka is our old cemetery. This cemetery, though it is overgrown with grass and with bushes and has practically no upright headstones, they still value as they might a treasure and guard it like the apple of their eye. For this is not only the place where their ancestors lie, rabbis, men of piety, learned ones, scholars and famous people, but also the only piece of land of which they are masters, the only bit of earth they own, where a blade of grass can sprout and a tree can grow, and the air is fresh, and one can breathe freely. If you haven't seen it, go down into the cemetery. Read the old, half-obliterated inscriptions on the leaning tombstones, and you will find in them the story of a whole people. And if you happen to be a man of feeling and imagination, then you will look upon this poor little town with its rich cemetery and repeat the old verses. How beautiful are your tents, O Jacob, how good are your resting places, O Israel.
Ah, ha, 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 ha. An amazing man, Tevye.
Who?
Sholem Aleichem. Who do you think? He traveled all over the world, here, there, all over, writing, lecturing, rubbing elbows with the greatest. But even so, he never lost touch with the little people of Kazrilevka.
That's because he never lost touch with himself, Menachem Mendel. It is written...
Please, have you. No quotations or misquotations, eh?
Very well. We'll go back to the books. Let's see. Wandering Star, Adventures of Musta. Ah, you remember this story? The one called Third Class?
If you ever plan to take a trip of any distance at all, don't, under any circumstance, travel first or second class. As far as first class is concerned, there isn't much to say. It's usually empty. And what's the pleasure in riding all by yourself with no one to talk to? You might even forget how to talk. And do you think second class is any better? Here you sit surrounded by people who may look no different from yourself, people with the same desires and the same temptations as yours. They would like to speak to you. They may be dying to know who you are, where you come from, and where you're going. But they sit facing each other like dummies in a store window. In short, when you travel second class, you are bound to feel like a stranger. You're a stranger among your own people. But if you travel third class, then you're completely at home. If anything, you may feel yourself just a little too much at home. All around you there is noise and confusion, crowding and pushing. You don't know just where you are and who your neighbors are, but it doesn't take you long to become acquainted with each other.
Your first trip to Broiberek?
I'm not going to Broiberek. I'm going to Zolotyevka.
Ah, to visit relatives.
No. On business.
Of course. The minute I laid eyes on you, I said to myself, there's a salesman. Pots and pans.
Not pots and pans. Linens and laces.
No doubt you're staying at the Hotel French, yeah?
Oh, no. I'll stay with my Uncle Mordka. He's a tailor.
You have an Uncle Mordka, a tailor? Oh, then you must be Borukhash Leodvosh's son-in-law.
Yes, I am Borukhash Leodvosh's son-in-law, and my wife is Shana Shandel, Borukhash Leodvosh's daughter. How did you know?
Because your mother-in-law's grandmother, Sarah Yente, and my wife's aunt, Fumislata, were, I believe, first cousins. And if I'm not mistaken, you are the minister...
If you are traveling third class and the time comes for morning prayers, and you don't have a prayer shawl or phylacteries with you, don't worry. Someone will see to it that you get both and anything else you need. In return, however, when you are through with your prayers, be so kind, please, as to open your suitcase and pass around whatever food you have brought. If you have only an orange or a piece of strudel, don't be ashamed. Pass it around. On the road and in company, appetites are lively. If you have a bottle of wine with you, you will certainly get plenty of customers. Everyone will taste it and give you his expert opinion.
Excellent wine. A very fine Bessarabian Muscat.
My dear sir, excuse me, but you're quite wrong. This is obviously an imported Ackerman.
What do you mean? Ackerman Muscat? Anyone who knows wine can tell that it's a Kovashna Bordeaux.
I say it's an Ackerman.
No. I still maintain.
Friends, please listen to me. When it comes to wine, ask a real expert. Of course.
Well?
Gentlemen, do you know what this is? It's plain, simple, pure, homemade kosher port. The kind we make in our own cellar.
Of course, you bore!
I knew it all the time!
Menachem Mendel.
Yes, Tevye.
If you don't mind my asking, where did that train whistle come from?
Oh, the train whistle? It was a sound effect.
Sound effect?
Effect, yes. They use them all the time on the radio, eh?
Menachem Mendel, is there anything you don't know?
My dear Tevye, I am a man of the world.
Of course, you weren't always so smart. You remember when I gave you all my money, my life savings, and you took it to your chuppets and lost every penny in the stock market?
Tevye, please. Did we come here to talk about me or Sholem Aleichem, eh?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to digress. As it is said, the world continues in its course. Let bygones be bygones. Time and tide wait for no man.
Speaking of time, do you remember Rev Nochem's clock?
Of course. Who doesn't remember it?
We had a hanging clock. It was an ancient clock that my grandfather had inherited from his father and his father's father straight back to the days of Count Khmelnytsky. What a pity that a clock is a lifeless thing, mute and without speech. Otherwise, what stories it could have told and told. It had a name throughout the town, Reb Nochem's clock, so unfaltering and true in its course that men came from all directions to set their own clocks and watches by it. Almost half the town ordered its life according to it. And what is Jewish life without a clock? How many things there are that must be timed to the minute? Lighting of the Sabbath candles, the end of the Sabbath, the daily prayers, the salting and the soaking of the meat, the intervals between meals. In short, our clock was the town clock. It was always faithful to us and to itself. And in all its existence, it never knew a repairman. But there came a day when a strange thing happened. A beautiful, cloudless day when we were sitting at the noonday meal. Whenever the clock struck, I liked to count the strokes, and I did it out loud.
9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
13? A fine mathematician you are. Who ever heard of a clock striking 13?
13, Father. On my word of honor, 13.
Fool. Don't ever repeat such nonsense. A clock can't strike 13.
Oh, don't scold the boy. I think it did strike 13.
Oh, another village heard from?
Despite his annoyance, my father began to suspect something, too. After dinner, he went to the clock, climbed on a stool, and prodded around inside until the clock began to strike. All three of us counted, nodding our heads at each stroke.
9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13?
A fine mathematician you are. Who ever heard of a clock striking 13?
13, Father. On my word of honor, 13.
Fool. Don't ever repeat such nonsense. A clock can't strike 13.
Oh, don't scold the boy. I think it did strike 13.
Oh, another village heard from?
Despite his annoyance, my father began to suspect something, too. After dinner, he went to the clock, climbed on a stool, and prodded around inside until the clock began to strike. All three of us counted, nodding our heads at each stroke.
9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
It struck 13.
Well, don't look so miserable. Take the clock down and fix it. After all, you're the expert.
Yes, of course.
My father took the clock down and busied himself with it. He sweated over it. He worked all day long. And when he finally hung it back in its place, the clock ran as it should. At midnight, we all stood around it and counted each stroke to 12, while my father beamed.
All fixed. No more 13.
I always said you were an expert. But there's one thing I don't understand. Why does it wheeze? It never used to wheeze like that before.
No. You're imagining things.
But listening carefully, we heard the clock wheeze whenever it got ready to strike, like an old man catching his breath before he coughed. And even the chime wasn't the same. The chime had been a happy one, a joyous one. And now something sad had crept in. A sadness like that in the song of an old, worn-out cantor toward the end of the Day of Atonement. Finally, my father reached a decision.
There isn't anything wrong with the clock. It's the weight. There isn't enough weight, enough life.
He fastened my mother's flat iron to the weight, a matter of several pounds. And the clock began to run like a charm. Father was overjoyed, a new man. But it didn't last very long. In a little while, the clock failed again.
More weight.
Desperately, my father attached more and more objects to the weight, a frying pan, a copper pitcher, a bag of sand. Each time the clock shuddered for a moment and then began to run again. Until one night, when the final catastrophe occurred.
What happened?
The clock fell down. It's in a million pieces.
Well, what did you expect? Everything you could imagine was hung on it. A half a ton at least. So it fell down. You wouldn't have done any differently yourself.
But what will happen to the town? How will everybody manage?
Don't worry. It takes more than a broken clock to disrupt a Jewish town. With God's help, we've survived fire, flood, disease, even pogroms. We'll survive this, too.
My mother was right, of course. The town survived, and our clock was soon a thing of the past. But now and then, to this very day, I can still hear it striking faintly in my dreams. Striking 13.
You know, Tevye, we mustn't give the impression that Sholem Aleichem's people were only interested in little trivial things, their own petty concerns.
Oh, definitely not. Nothing could be farther from the truth. We had more than our share of the world's happenings and its headaches.
Do you remember the time of the Dreyfus case?
Yes. There's the story right here. Dreyfus and Kozrilivka. I'll never forget the excitement.
I doubt if the Dreyfus case made such a stir anywhere as it did in Kozrilivka. Paris, they say, seethed like a boiling vat. But the anguish and pain that Kozrilivka underwent, Paris will not experience till Judgment Day. And how did Kozrilivka learn about the Dreyfus case? From Reb Shea's son, Seidel. Seidel was the only person in town who subscribed to a newspaper, and all the news of the world they learned from him, or rather through him. He told them what he read in the paper, but they turned it around to suit themselves, because they understood better than he did. When Seidel first came to the synagogue and told how in Paris a certain Jewish captain named Dreyfus had been in prison for turning over government papers to the enemy, they were quite unmoved.
A Jew has no business climbing so high, interfering with kings and their affairs.
But later, when Seidel came and explained that the whole thing was a plot, that the Jewish captain Dreyfus was innocent, then the town became interested in the case. At once, Dreyfus became a Kozrilivkite. Whenever two people came together, he was the third.
Have you heard?
I've heard.
Sent away for good.
A life sentence.
And for nothing at all.
A false accusation.
When Seidel told the news that the case might be tried again, Kozrilivka really began to boil. As the trial developed, they got tired of waiting for Seidel to come to the synagogue with the news. They went to his house. And while Seidel read in his loudest voice, they listened, discussed, shouted, and argued, all at the same time. There were two people whom Kozlilivka came to love and revere, Emil Zola and the lawyer Laborie. For Zola, every one of them would have gladly died.
What did you think of Zola's letters?
Pearls, diamonds, rubies.
Gradually, a great excitement seized the town. They tore not only the paper to pieces, but Zadel himself. They couldn't eat. They didn't sleep nights. They waited only for the next day and the next and the next. Suddenly, there arose a terrible crisis when the lawyer Laborie was shot. All Kozlilivka was beside itself.
Why? What for?
Such an outbreak.
Without cause.
Worse than Sodom.
That shot was fired at their heads. The bullet was lodged in their breast, just as if the assassin had shot at Kozlilivka itself.
God in heaven, reveal thy wonders. Thou knowest how, if thou wishest. Perform a miracle that Laborie might live.
And God performed the miracle. Laborie lived. By the time the last day of the trial arrived, the excitement was so intense that the Kozlilivkites shook us with a fever. Not a single one of them slept a wink that night. They rolled fitfully in their beds and waited for day to come. At the first sign of dawn, they rushed to the post office. Little by little, a crowd gathered around the closed gates, and the streets were soon filled with people. Men walked up and down, yawning, stretching, and praying under their breath. The gates were unlocked at last, and Zadel came for his newspaper. But when he opened the paper and read the sad news aloud, there arose such a clamor, such a roar, that the heavens could have split open. Their outcry was not against the judges who gave the wrong verdict, not at the generals who swore falsely, not at the French who showed themselves up so badly. The outcry was against Zadel.
It cannot be! Such a verdict is impossible!
Fool! It's right here in black and white. See?
Ah, we don't care! The truth must prevail! What kind of lies are you telling us?
I'm not telling you lies! Look! See what the paper says!
Ah, paper! Paper! If you stood with one foot in heaven and the other on earth, we still wouldn't believe you!
Oh, such a thing must not be! It must never be! Never! Never!
They shouted and stormed. It was never to be. Never, never. And when all was said and done, who was right?
Menachem Mendel. Look, that man behind the glass window over there, he's waving his arms at us.
Oh, that means it's time to end the program.
Oh, well, how do we do that? I've never ended a program
before. It's very simple. A few closing remarks, a suitable quotation. Let me see. Here, the very thing. The dedication of Sholem Aleichem's autobiography, The Great Fair. Go ahead, Tevye, read it.
Oh, no, I
go ahead, go on.
Dear beloved children, to you I dedicate my work of works, my book of books, the song of songs of my soul. I realize that this book, just as any man's handiwork, is not without defect. But who knows better than you what it has cost me? I have given to it of my best, my heart. Read it from time to time. Perhaps you or your children will learn something from it. To love our people and to appreciate their spiritual treasures, which lies scattered in all the dark corners of our great exile in this great world. This would be the best reward for my faithful more than 30 years' labor in our mother tongue and literature. Your father, the author.
Ah, what a shame. A writer like that, and he didn't live long enough to finish writing his own life story.
Yes. But a man like Sholem Aleichem doesn't need an autobiography. His life is in every line he ever wrote. Every character he ever conceived of. You, I, all of us. We're part of him.
I suppose you're right, Tevye. Well, it's late. Time for me to go.
Yeah. Me too, Menachem Mendel. Sholem Aleichem to you.
Aleichem Sholem, my dear Tevye. Aleichem Sholem.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting the Honorable Edward S. Silver, District Attorney of Kings County, New York. Mr. Silver.
At the turn of the last century, I was born on the Lower East Side, a short block from the East River. Yet strange as it might seem, I do not seem a stranger in Kozrelevka. My good parents of blessed memory did not fail to preserve for me the heritage of faith and joy of my people in the face of a rough economic struggle. Some might say, as things are measured today, that I was an underprivileged lad. But truly, Pop and Mom were spiritual millionaires, and I am fortunate to have gotten my share of their great wealth. Believe me, please, that the lot of a district attorney is not an easy one. Seeing the justices done has always been beset with difficulties. When to be lenient, when to be hard, is not an easy thing to determine. There is no simple formula one can follow. Public office, too, carries with it many unofficial obligations that tires one's body and mind. Thus it is, as the Sabbath approaches, I look to it as one does for an oasis in the desert. I live in my home again. It is not just a way station for bed, raiment, and food. I see and talk with my wife and children around the festive Sabbath table. I meet again with my cronies in the synagogue and regain a leisurely pace. Crime and juvenile delinquency lose its sharpness, and renewal of hope and confidence is reborn with which to tackle my daily problems. No country club can give one the spiritual satisfaction of sitting next to your son in the synagogue. Too many of us have lost the pleasure of the simple and spiritual treasures of our people. They are not hard to come by. They are there for the taking. And may I close with the words of the psalmist. Peace be within thy walls and property within thy palaces. For my brethren and companions' sakes, I will now say, peace be with ye.
Thank you, Mr. Silver. Our eternal light drama today, Not Without Tears, was written by Seymour Wright. This script was based on Sholem Aleichem's The Old Country, translated by Julius and Francis Butwin, Tevye's Daughters, translated by Francis Butwin, both published by Crown Publishers, and The Great Fair, published by the Noonday Press. The music was composed by Morris Mamorski and conducted by Roy Shield. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Joe DeSantis, Joseph Julian, Ralph Bell, Louis Sorin, Guy Sorrell, Danny Occo, Bob Hastings, Sam Raskin, Francois Grimard, Guy Repp, Leon Janney, and Beatrice Pons. This is Mel Brandt. This has been an NBC Radio Network production directed by Daniel Sutter. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is the NBC Radio Network.